Well, hi, my name's Gary Inch, and I'm a professor of dramatic arts at the University of Connecticut. And this interview, I suppose, is centered to some extent on a recent book, anthology of plays that I published recently with my colleague at Stanford University, Professor Samuel Saber. It comes from about 5 years of field research in the West Bank. Jerusalem is on Gaza, and collect 7 plays into an anthology translated in English. So it's the first full anthology of plays written exclusively by Palestinians in Palestine, available in English in the West. My background is as a stage designer and stage director. I've been at the University of Connecticut for some 30 years. I was head of the Department of Dramatic Arts and founding artistic director of Connecticut Repertory Theater for roughly 15 or 16 of those years. And I've been going to Palestine and the Middle East for about, off and on, for about 10 years, and spent about 4 years living there since 2012. That's probably enough for now.
Okay. And I am Catherine Moore. I'm an assistant professor of art history, also in the School of Fine Arts at the University of Connecticut, and I'm specifically in the Department of Art and Art History. I teach and research in Italian Renaissance art, medieval European art, and also Islamic art, especially of the Mediterranean region. So my research has also taken me to the Eastern Mediterranean, North Africa, and a lot of time has also been spent in Italy and Western Europe. In 2017, I published my first book with Cambridge University Press entitled The Architecture of the Christian Holy Land, Reception from Late Antiquity Through the Renaissance. And I am continuing to do research on the intersection of European and Islamic art history. My current book project is on the idea of the Arabesque. But today we are focusing on Gary English's work, and specifically his recent book publication entitled Stories Under Occupation and Other Plays from Palestine, as he mentioned, produced with Samer al-Saber. And this was just published in 2020. And in this particular contribution, Gary, you present a context for understanding the importance of Palestinian plays to contemporary theater and culture more generally. So I'm going to ask you some questions about this, but I wanted to start with this very general question. I'm curious about how you first became interested in this subject matter. In other words, what is the nature of your personal relationship with Palestine and the question of Palestinian identity?
Right. Well, this is a complicated question. I will try to be brief, but my relationship to the region goes back to my very early days as I fascinated by the history, literature, and culture of Palestine and the Arab in general. Nevertheless, I was raised more or less by default as a sort of Christian Zionist. My own journey came to a point of major transformation during the 2008 war in Gaza, that also intersected with my interest in the form and structure of Palestine being produced in West Bank in particular, that grew out of a particular intersection between, you know, what is often called the personal and the political realities Palestinians face. In 2008, the Freedom Theater in Jenin Camp produced an adaptation by Nabil Al-Rai and Michaela Miranda of George Orwell's The Animal Farm, which gained a great deal of international attention. I resolved to go in 2010 and met the artists of the theater, including one of its founders and artistic director, Giuliano Merchamis. Giuliano was a very large personality, a well-known Palestinian Jewish actor, and a kind of iconic figure. When he was murdered outside the theater in 2011, I returned and was asked to help the theater reconstitute artistic infrastructure, and spent 2012 and 2013 as artistic director of the theater in Camp. I lived and worked with the actors and staff for over a year, producing several plays, and directed an adaptation of The Island by Alpo Fugard that toured the West Bank and internationally for the next few years. I became engaged with several other theaters in the West Bank and Gaza during that year and saw an enormous amount of varied and fascinating work. Samer al-Saber and I could see that this work was original, highly theatrical, and really published and distributed outside the region. But living in a place, a conflict zone, is very different than visiting one. Even when conducting research or professional practice, and I could feel a significant internal shift in my own sort of internal reality take place. To the extent possible, I assimilated the theater culture of Palestine in Palestine and became committed to finding ways for these stories and the experience behind the stories to become available to an English-speaking audience.
So my next question is, how did you select the particular plays that are presented in the anthology?
Well, Samer Al-Saber and I met in Palestine 2012 and became close associates within the community there. We both directed plays there and worked with several different theaters. So when we outlined how to produce the anthology, we wanted a broad but particular group of theaters and artists to be represented. And we could see that these same theaters also serve to represent historic Palestine geographically. Of the seven plays, there was one play, The Siege, from Jenin in the north of the West Bank. One play, Taha, from Haifa on the north coast. One play, 3-1, from Hebron in the south. Two plays from Ramallah, including Gaza Monologues, produced by Ashtar Theater and originally performed in Gaza. And Stories Under Occupation, which was produced in 2002 at Al-Kasaba Theater, located at the time in Ramallah and Jerusalem. The play Shear Sisters was produced by Al-Hara Theater in Bet Jala outside Jerusalem, and one play, We Are the Children of the Camp, was produced by Al-Rawad Arts Center in Ida, refugee camp in Bethlehem. The microbial geography is very different in each of these places, and the plays to some extent exhibit these differences. But collectively, they reflect the range of Palestinian experiences, including those in urban or rural environments, from Israel or the West Bank and Gaza, or from the refugee camps. Most of the plays actually date from 2010, after the Second Intifada subsided, when there was to some extent a rebuilding of theater and cultural infrastructure that had been destroyed previously during the early 2000s due to the Intifada. Artistic and cultural resistance is not a new idea in Palestine and dates back at least to the 1950s. And Jerusalem was a center for Palestinian theater for decades before theaters developed in the cities of the West Bank. But while not all theater in Palestine is focused on the so-called conflict, much of it is seen as resistance to the reality of a brutal military occupation.
Yeah, that's really interesting, since these plays are often characterized, especially in the press coverage that I've seen, as responses to a conflict that spans decades rather than acts of resistance responding to localized concerns or unique experiences of the occupation. So it seems that even this phrase, Palestinian experience, can be misleadingly reductive.
Yes.
So perhaps would it be more accurate to say that these plays address the question of Palestinian experiences, emphatically plural?
Yes, that actually works well. Within the anthology, I have an essay where I suggest how we might understand the context for these plays. Several of the plays deal with aspects of conflict and post-conflict trauma within certain groups, such as Gaza Monologues, We Are the Children Camp, and Stories Under Occupation. But some, like 3-1 and Shakespeare's Sisters, deal with themes regarding life within Palestinian society. One focuses on what it means to be an artist in Palestine and the relatively more conservative of Hebron. And Shakespeare's Sisters is a wonderful play about issues related to gender norms and the repression of women in society generally. The title is taken from the story A Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf. Taha is somewhat unique as it recalls the destruction of Sufaria, a village in 1948 in the Galilee, but is seen through the eyes of one of Palestine's greatest poets, Taha Muhammad Ali. The play follows his life from a boy in a farming village, the imposed expulsion of his family to Lebanon in 1948, his eventual return, and his rise as a major national poet. But the play, like nearly all the plays, focuses on the human elements of these people as they navigate the difficulties of conquest and occupation. We follow the tribulations and trials of loss, grief, forgiveness, and rebirth. Collectively, we felt this collection exhibits a wide array of personal experiences and dramatic and political forms and influences.
So as you know, I've also worked on Palestine quite a bit, but really from the perspective of art history, My research has focused upon the idea of the Holy Land within the geographic imagination of Europe, especially in the medieval and Renaissance periods. In a number of ways, art and architecture play a special role in representing relationships between various European locations and the Holy Land. And what the Holy Land is or means, of course, has varied over history. And I've particularly been struck by how an imagined idea of the Holy Land, inspired by some aspects of the real Palestine, can take on a life of its own and even confound perceived boundaries between reality and imagination. So I wanted to ask you specifically about this relationship between real and imagined spaces and how you understand the role of theater in this dialectic of real and imagined spaces of Palestine.
This is such a great question. And the way I think I'll approach it to begin with is to show how the theater relates to how the Palestinian national movement evolved over the last century. Much of what informs this movement is the historical factual reality of Palestine, even as a part of the Ottoman Empire until 1918. Jaffa, for example, was the center of orange production in the Middle East long before 1948. Jenin was the watermelon capital of the region. Hebron was always the largest city in Palestine and a major trade center. Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Ramallah, Nazareth, Haifa, Acre, Safed were all urban centers of Palestinian life. Photos of Jaffa in the 1930s and early 1940s show movie theaters, radio stations, men and women together at work in contemporary dress, etc. And farmers lived in hundreds, if not thousands, of villages and outposts throughout nearly the entirety of historic Palestine. But the fracture of 1948 and 1967 destroyed Palestine as a contentious political space, but not as the historic place for both Palestinians living there and for those in diaspora. Memory, as in the play Taha, serves as the main tool to maintain the historic Palestine as both a real and imagined space. One of the main themes of this book is to show how the arts, and theater in particular, collectively express a national and cultural identity when a unified geographic and political identity is no longer possible. Palestine is so fragmented, there is no universal agreement of what it actually means. Suggested in an essay in the book, quote, "The fragmented and conflicted situations Palestinians face help a political theater that expresses multiple views about the conflict, the occupation, the nature of roots, and the desired outcomes. Palestinian drama asks many questions that defy singular or definite answers. What exactly is the objective of resistance, and how should it implement it? Continued expansion with the continued expansion of settlements, the confiscation of land in the West Bank, splintered Palestinian geography and national identity, and different factions of Palestinians, can there even be a Palestinian national? What is Palestine? Is it the historic Palestine from Lebanon, Sinai, from the Mediterranean to Jordan? Is it the West Bank and Gaza? Is it based on pre-1967 borders? Does it include East Jerusalem? Is Palestine, as some in Israel claim, merely an unconnected set of 8 municipalities in the West Bank that are urban islands under the Palestinian Authority? Or is Palestinian primarily an idea, a memory, a place and soil, a people with a distinct culture in a permanent, both internal and external diaspora?" End quote. That's the quote in the book. The problem at the heart of your question about the real and imagined space of Palestine that Palestinians continually attempt to find expression for, and also the problem most typically difficult for outsiders to fully grasp, is that while the memory of Palestine is so crucial to the maintenance, growth, and development of Palestinian identity and culture, the current material circumstances have to be clearly marked, defined, and resisted. As Samer points out in his essay in the anthology, quote, "The distinct markers of theater under occupation and state building pervade the plays of the period. Suspended between continuing resistance against the occupation and immediate social concerns, topics and themes express a definitive defiance of normalization. Children should not live under bombardment. Women must not accept patriarchal customs. Palestinian cities are always under threat of invasion. The artistic expressions of Palestine must be honored. The sacred and holy sites must be defended, and the Nakba must not be forgotten. The cry against normalization of the status quo in a so-called era of peace is juxtaposed to an internal struggle for self-development, individual and social development. Yet the situation does not always permit the freedom to create, analyze, and interpret. Thus, the theatrical representations often have a schizophrenic quality, dealing with an overwhelming number of issues at the same time. To reduce play to a single purpose, meaning, would reduce conditions in Palestine to a false essence, making direct occupation the only continuing thread throughout. This is not the case, end quote. So to conclude, in between these two ideas or influences, memory, imagination, and the contemporary realities, on the other hand, both internal to Palestine and in relationship to Israel, Palestinians find themselves living more or less permanently in this sort of liminal space, and their theater is constantly wrestling and attempting to resolve these influences, or at least attempting to find between them and within them new artistic expression and meaning.
So the plays that you introduce in this book all seem to be deeply informed by historical events that have shaped the relationship between Israel and Palestine. As a historian myself, I was struck by the potential for these plays to engage with the question of perception, and in this case, the often neglected, which is to say, underrepresented viewpoint of Palestinians. So, as you have argued, Palestinian viewpoints are often neglected because of an assumed association with terrorism and religious fanaticism. And of course, you're not unique in having argued this. With this in mind, I wanted to ask, how do you understand the relationship between theater and history, particularly in connection to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Well, part of my answer to this will be to comment on the way the term conflict is applied. To many, the use of the term conflict skews the understanding of the situation away from the roots of the problem. Excuse me. If, for example, we view Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Zionism in general as colonialism, then the idea of conflict is seen differently. Even the term occupation is at times troubling, as occupation is typically a temporary condition while colonization is permanent. The conflict is not the thing. Conflict results from colonialist presence. As suggested in Sommer's quote, the telling of history, and in fact the claiming of a personal and collective history of Palestinians, is an essential element of theater in all culture, and certainly in Palestine.
Okay, but the term conflict, beyond this term, it seems like you are arguing for the essential role of theater as a form of history writing. Yet the plays inevitably focus upon subjective experiences of individual characters. The representation of these unique experiences seems essential to countering stereotypical perceptions of the Arab or Muslim terrorists, for example. So I think my question was really aimed at this larger issue of subjectivity versus objectivity and the representation of historical events and how an audience might react to the perceived dissonance between standard understandings of historical events and the experience that's revealed on stage. So underlying this dissonance seems to lurk questions of legitimacy and authenticity. Isn't that true?
Yes, for sure. To some extent, the nature of conflict in Palestine is exactly found in competing historical narratives. Theater can be a form of history writing. It is always done as an inductive experiment. That is, it moves from the particular to the general. When we speak of standard standings of historical events, particularly in regard to Palestine, we are already in trouble. I am admitted by Shahid Ali, a Kashmiri poet's comment, quote, "My memory is again in the way of your history," end quote. Theater relates history not as an objective narrative, storytelling. And the dissonance you refer to, the result of the authentic personal stories that actually may contradict called standardized understanding of history, or the ways in which ethnic groups are characterized or demonized in part to justify that standard, sometimes corrupted historical narrative. One of the plays we included, "We Are the Children of the Camp," is almost a kind of litany of history going back to the Balfour Declaration, the British mandate and calls the losses of Palestine since. The siege, of course, claims an historical validity regarding the Israeli army siege of the Nativity Church in 2002, and Taha remembers village life before and immediately after the Nakba, the war of 1948. Form and artistic modalities are different, and they express their themes in varied ways, but making a legitimate claim to historical remembering permeates the work as a way for Palestinians to find themselves rather than allowing themselves to be defined by others, including Israel and the West in general.
So from my own experience working in this field, I've always been aware of potentially being accused of taking sides, either for Palestine or for Israel. In your own writing, you referred to the problematic insistence on having a quote-unquote balanced perspective. So it seems that as scholars or artists, our reluctance to be labeled as either pro-Palestine or pro-Israel can have a chilling or silencing effect. So I was curious, how has your work in this book or more generally engaged with this potential problem?
Yeah, great question. I begin from the position that recognizing and affirming Palestinian rights as a moral necessity that does not have as precondition any particular political solutions or outcomes. I was raised to believe that oppression must be resisted, whether it is the systematic racism in this country, apartheid in South Africa, or the numerous ways that Palestinians are exploited and aggressively repressed. I reject completely the idea that recognition of this moral necessity is fundamentally anti-Israel. Israel and some Western allies have, to some extent, successfully convinced many throughout the West that any expression of Palestinian identity and experience is by definition anti-Israel. That is like saying the recognition of systematic racism in the United States is somehow anti-American. Israel is a nation state and needs to be held accountable for its actions and its history. By labeling artists, scholars, or even particular works of art as definitively pro or anti-Israel characterizes the way that almost deliberately attempts to destroy a sense of nuance, complexity, or legitimacy as an inherent truthful expression of, in this case, Palestinian life. By placing artists, scholars, and their work, whether for or against Israel or Palestine, robs various narratives of their authenticity and independence, and too often attempts to co-opt them for a political purpose they may not intend. Palestinian narrative does not exist in juxtaposition to Israel. Again, this is like saying the work of Toni Morrison or Alice Walker is in some way anti-white or anti-American. Their work might thrive as anti-white supremacist, but it does not exist only in relation to white America. I find that when we were on tour, that is when I have toured Freedom Theater Productions internationally to a wide array of venues, that the audiences grapple sometimes very comfortably with the obvious humanity of Palestinian artists and stories in juxtaposition to their own biases. In the dozens of talkbacks we've conducted internationally, the audience bear witness to the justice Palestinians face and attempt to reconcile this with their feelings of kinship to Israel. In the audience in this position of discomfort and reflection is one of the main functions of theater. No other major conflict in contemporary history has suffered the sort of mindless insistence on all works of art and scholarship dealing with that conflict be balanced in political terms. When some people talk about balance, what they really mean is to silence. Occasionally, I have suffered some criticism for my work, and even on this campus have met with resistance to it, but by and large, UConn has been extremely supportive. So I have abandoned any concerns being labeled as the attempts to repress or in some ways censor stories or points of view says more about those engaging in the censorship and name-calling than it says about me. Israelis have suffered and indeed have a right to tell their stories well, but as one has to ask, while we all have a right to a story, for what purpose do we tell? Do we tell the story to liberate or to continue to repress?
And along these lines, I was particularly struck by the text of the play The Siege, as you know, focused upon Israel's military siege of the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem in 2002. Historically, the church has been a site of convergence between all Muslims and Christians, including Palestinians. My own work has confronted assumptions about the exclusively Muslim or Christian nature of such a sacred space. I think, of course, we call it the Church of the Nativity, even though it functions simultaneously as a place for Muslim worship. So I was curious, what potential do you think a play like The Siege has to force those outside, specifically the audience, to look inside into the experience of these kind of contested spaces and identities?
This is a great question that sits at the heart of the play, The Siege. International audiences really struggled in a very positive way with this play in the United Kingdom and the United States. The play forces the audience to deal with the humanity of the fedayeen, or a Palestinian fighter, a deeply controversial image in the West. All fighters are not terrorists, and all terrorists are not fighters. The two terms are different. They mean different things. The fighters in this play, who were representative of those actually besieged in 2002, express a variety of human traits, frailties, needs, hopes, and complexities in the best traditions of the war novels of Herman Wouk or James Jones. In the holy space of the Church of the Nativity, held as sacred by Christians and Muslims, we are brought into a space that, particularly in the West, lives much more as a space of our imagination than from personal experience. We are introduced to the play by a narrator, a Palestinian tour guide, a Christian, who also doubles as one of the fighters during the so-called flashback portion of the play. Fighters were both Christian and Muslim, and the Israeli army did not distinguish between the two. Right away, we as the audience are forced up against any biases we may have that Palestinians are other, based solely on religion. So the space the play takes place in is paramount to the play's effectiveness. On another, however, Siege has multiple layers of meaning, both as an external material reality and as an internal state of mind or being. The characters are deeply human, funny, complex, angry, imaginative, kind, and respectful, particularly of the place they are in. They struggle with their position and responsibility. This humanity, which is obvious in the play, is obvious when one engages with Palestinians in general, is in direct contrast to the tropes foisted onto Palestinians as inhuman, uncaring, or cruel. Edward Said had a lot to say about how the West demonizes and orientalizes the Arab as anti-Western, inferior, and inhuman. In the same way, Frantz Fanon had a lot to say about how the West cast Africans and Black descendants of slaves as other, inhuman, and inferior. As a result of our orientation, which in the West cannot escape without tremendous personal effort, most arrive at every discussion about Palestine with a series of biases we are not able to trace to any particular influence or event. The Siege, the play, demands we deal with those issues and has been remarkably successful. Siege as a state of mind applies to the audience and to the fighters. We are all besieged by one thing or another, and we must all break through that siege, largely internal, to engage fully with our natural humanity.
As I formulated that last question, I was also thinking about your particular experience of directing The Island, which was performed internationally and also locally at the Connecticut Repertory Theater in 2013. When the play was originally written and staged to address the question of South African identity in the period of apartheid. By directing the play with Palestinian actors and reimagining the setting as a prison cell that stands for Israeli-occupied Palestine, you seem to explore the role of theater in making imaginative connections between disparate geographic locations and cultural identities. I was curious how your directorial experience with The Island has informed your larger understanding of theater's potential to engage with the relationship of identity and geography, particularly as a space of desired belonging.
The Island was originally written in English by Otho Fugard and his two actor collaborators, Winston Nichona and John Connie. It was prevented from being performed in South Africa during apartheid, so it was first done under an alternate title, the Hadoshi Span, which is the name of the character's cell block in a prison. And then the play opened as The Island in London and New York. It follows two Black African political prisoners at an imaginary prison inspired by Robben Island, where Nelson Mello was held during the height of apartheid. In Jenin, we decided to do the play adapted into Arabic with two Palestinian actors to reflect the similarities between the political prison system in South Africa and, in particular, the administrative detention system Israel uses to arrest and detain Palestinians, often without due process. We opened the Jenin in the spring of 2013 in Arabic and toured internationally to seven countries, including Sweden, Brazil, the United States, in the original English. The play in the English with support from UConn, the University of Gothenburg, and the University of Sao Paulo. To be sure, you're spot on that the play's adaptation connects two distinct historical periods, cultural identities, and geographical locations. When we performed in Palestine, the main connection audience was the ubiquitous experience of Palestinian families who have loved ones, including children, arrested and held sometime for years at a time without formal charge. We used Israeli and Palestinian place names, character names, and local idioms to connect the action of the play as much as possible to local experience. But internationally, we performed the play in the original English, but other elements of the production the same, including the Israeli prison uniforms from the 1990s and, of course, the Palestinian actors themselves. As we interacted with the audience, a kind of meta-textual effect, to be clear, emerging, as it were, between the play's stated location, the origin of the actors as Black Africans, and on the other hand, the identity of the Palestinian actors with the subliminal or implied location of the play as Palestine, connecting to the actors themselves. In fact, the audience was watching a play that was, in a temporal sense, taking place in South Africa and Palestine simultaneously. The actors portrayed African characters, and in another sense, themselves as Palestinians at the same time. Not unlike the effect of the siege, the product is empathy. But in this case, empathy is transferred, that which is familiar to that which is unfamiliar. The natural empathy most Americans might feel for political prisoners in South Africa during apartheid migrates to Palestinian versions of the same characters through their compelling performances and their warmth, the Palestinians' performances, their warmth, humor, pain, and humanity. In one sense, the play The Island functioned as a mediator between those familiar and unfamiliar images. The identity of the characters and actors merge in a way in which separate identities inhabit the stage and the dramatic moments simultaneously. This is quite evident as the audience spoke often quite eloquently about how they imagined these dual identities in front of them, sometimes commenting that it almost seemed they were watching two plays at the same time. The same is true of some of the content of the play, as the two characters are working on a performance of Antigone by Sophocles for a prison performance. So there were really three layers of reality and two forms of mediation, both the political realities of South Africa and our very familiar connection to the Greek play by Sophocles now intervene, enhancing our ability to think about Palestine as a space newly introduced and less occupied by the various tropes or stereotypes associated with Western ideas about Palestinians. Finally, both South Africa and Palestine share a similar dynamic in that the subject of political oppression includes the indigenous population. As with all colonized subjects, the colonization of the mind is perhaps the most difficult obstacle to overcome, forcing the colonized to feel like they are in exile in their own land.
And I'd like to finish by asking you what's next. So do you have future projects that will continue to engage with Palestinian theater?
Well, I certainly hope so, although certain circumstances, both nationally and internationally, may prevent my ability to visit. You know, I love it there, and I love my friends and associates there. And we've talked about several projects. One adaptation of Richard III by Shakespeare in Haifa at a theater called Al-Midan. A play called The Bridge by my close friend Nabil Al-Rai from the Freedom Theater about the so-called Allenby Bridge, which is the point of transfer for Palestinians out of the country into Jordan, and continued writing about the work. I have a couple of book chapters coming out this month in various anthologies, and a new play that I'm collaborating with another playwright. So hopefully over the next few years, the work will continue to evolve and I'll be able to get back, but I have no idea when.
Okay, well, great. Thank you so much for your thoughtful responses.
And thank you. Thanks so much for great questions.